You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the DCCD. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. As promised yesterday, I'm going to give you my monthly commentary on the jobs report that came out this morning in Washington, D.C. at 8:30 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. And it was a very good report, but not outstanding and certainly not to celebrate, even though the stock market did celebrate, hitting a new record on the Dow Jones average of over 17,000. So Wall Street has really been seeing a terrific rally. Stocks are up. People are making money. That's called the wealth effect. When people feel wealthier, economists have a name for it, the wealth effect. And if you're obviously in investing, whether it's mutual funds, individual stocks, commodities such as investing in futures contracts, you've been really making a lot of money. The question is, what's happening to the U.S. economy? And that really is the question. Because Wall Street might be having a terrific time, but the rest of the country is not. Because earlier this month, we got the bad news, and it really was bad news, that the economy in the first quarter of this year shrank by a negative 2.9%, almost 3%. Now, let me put that in a little historical context before I get the job report, because they're very much related, and you need to understand what's going on. Historically, the United States economy has grown at a rate, and I'm talking the real gross domestic product, or GDP, and that's the sale of all final goods and services in the economy. Historically, about 3.1%, 3.2%, and the actual rate depends on where you start and where you end, but that's a good trend line, if you will. If the economy was just doing average 3%, 3.1% is good. Well, not in the first quarter, it was almost negative 3%. Not positive, negative. So we're 6 percentage points, nearly 6, well, actually, 6 percentage points to get back just to the historical trend or average. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on the verge, and some would say we're already in it, and I'm sort of in that school, of another recession. Now, here's what you need to understand. You're not really going to find out about that until the earliest, in my mind, will be August. Now, why do I say that? The end of July, we'll have the first estimate of what the real GDP did in the second quarter that just ended 30 June. Now, what you need to understand, and I warn people of this, that number is based on incomplete information. They don't have all the information. That's why you have a second and third estimate. Now, most economists will say that the second estimate, which you'll get at the end of August, is not only more reliable, but that gives you a rather solid idea of whether the economy grew and how much or shrank and how much. Also, the third estimate usually is the most complete. That's why they have it. But usually it's not a radical change. However, this last quarter it was, because I've seen these numbers really swing by a large margin. So I'm warning you, not to ignore the July number, because it could be negative. And if it is, the definition of a recession that economists use is two consecutive quarters of negative growth or shrinkage in the U.S. economy. We already have had one. And we also had information in June that May consumption expenditures, which is a major component of GDP, declined. Because GDP, if you've taken any basic macroeconomic course in college, which I have taken many of them, I am an economist by training or education, as well as had a lot of practical experience in the financial services industry, as well as aerospace, but much longer for financial services. I've been both practicing as well as teaching in the past, not recently, but in the past. I used to teach courses at the University of Texas at Dallas for a couple of years on financial markets, namely money banking and financial instruments. So I'm giving you a little background on where I'm coming from. So GDP consists of consumption. I'm keeping it simple here. Consumption expenditures, which is the largest chunk, usually 2/3 to 70%, roughly. It's going to vary. Government expenditures, which really are mostly, not completely, from tax revenues. Remember, the government doesn't really produce anything. They largely redistribute wealth. And then investment, which is the most important. And I don't mean investment in the sense of you investing in stocks and bonds or mutual funds or real estate or gold, silver, whatever. I'm talking real investment in the economy as a business owner would think of it. And that would be investment in plant and equipment, new office space, investing in vehicles, investing in inventory. That's what in the microeconomic world is considered investment. And the problem is, that's the problem. Because investment is largely a function of both savings, because you need savings to finance that investment. But more importantly, business owners have to feel that the economy is growing, and it's not growing. In other words, what are the business prospects? And what really influences them is uncertainty. To the extent they're uncertain as to the future business prospects, they're not going to be willing to invest. Now, I'm going to relate all this in a moment to the jobs report. But you need to understand that I believe, and this is not a majority view, I need to say this. There are many other people on the other side. Many of them work in Wall Street. And what you need to understand by many people that work, and I used to be in the financial service industry, not at Wall Street, but you have really a lot of people wear rosy glasses. They're cheerleaders. That's what I used to call them. They're cheerleaders. They always will look for the positive news. I consider myself, and always have, a realist. I'm not an optimist. I'm not a pessimist. I try to look at reality and come to an objective conclusion about it. It's not that I wish we didn't have a booming economy. I truly believe and want a booming economy, because I firmly believe the U.S. economy, with the right economic policies, could be growing at 4%, 5%, 6%. And at sustainable rates of not only above 3%, but approaching 4%. The big proviso there, or the big but there, is the correct economic policies. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the problem. The correct economic policies is, first you have to diagnose what is the core problem in the U.S. economy today. Bar none. It is out of control government spending, because we've had this year in, year out now, going on 13 years. Unlucky, 13 is an unlucky number. Another 8 years of George Bush and 5 years of Barack Obama. Because the spending started to get out of control during the Bush administration. That's George W. Bush. Yes, he lives in Dallas, not in my neighborhood. He was the big spender, as were the Republican Party, when they had control of both the House and the Senate. That's why I'm not overly optimistic that even if the Republican Party wins in November, and I'm not a Republican or Democrat, but I do hope they win, because we literally, the American people cannot afford a deadlock government. And what I mean by that, we do need one political party, and the only one that even remotely has a clue what to do is the Republican Party. But neither party is my first or second choice, because neither party has been able to convince me and many other people that they're really serious about getting out of control government spending under control. And part of the problem is they simply don't understand the problem. There's no sense of urgency because they don't understand it. They don't even know they have a problem. Now, some will say they have the problem, but they don't have a courage to do what needs to be done. And as a minimum, as a first step, what needs to be done to reduce the uncertainty coming out of Washington is getting government spending back in control, which means as a minimum, balance the budget. Actually, you should be cutting the budget. We're not doing that. By the end of September, well, we'll know by October, we'll know what the numbers are in terms of how much the government spent in this fiscal year, 2014, which ends 30th of September. And it looks like it'll be somewhere another year of a major deficit of over $600 billion. Over $600 billion. Up until George Bush's last year in office, we never in the entire history of the United States had a deficit of over $500 billion. Yet for the entire President Obama's administration, we've had deficit after deficit of deficit. Initially, $1.4 trillion, some improvement, $1.3, some improvement slightly under $1.3, slightly under $1.1, and last year, $686 billion, and now another year of over $600 billion. A balanced budget means zero. That's how far away we are from a balanced budget. That's the situation, and we're on a verge of a recession. What happens if the U.S. economy goes into a recession? What happens? People clearly will be unemployed, but the biggest hit is in government revenues because they decline, and as a percentage of real GDP, they go down. Historically, revenues run about 18%, 18.1, 18.2 of GDP, gross domestic product. Government spending has been running above 20%. It actually nearly hit 25%. And that's just federal spending. So the number one problem of the U.S. economy today that is preventing growth in jobs and the growth in the economy is the federal government. That's the problem. And there's no way to hide from that. And the Democratic Party has absolutely no interest of controlling government spending. They actually want to make it larger. And their answer to balancing the budget is not cutting government spending. Far from it, they want to increase it. Their answer to my criticism and many other people's, well, if you want a balanced budget, then you should increase taxes. That's their answer. And that is exactly what President Obama has been doing. What's the problem with that? Where does this money come from? It comes from the private sector, because it is in the private sector where wealth is created. Wealth, income, and jobs come from the private sector, not government. See, one of the increases in jobs in June was an additional 26,000 more people were hired by the government, the first time in several years. In other words, government got bigger. I wouldn't celebrate that, because if the economy goes into recession, which I think it will, a couple of things are going to happen. The stock market will be going down. What else will be going down? What is the one thing? There are several things I look for. These are called economic indicators. And one fairly good indicator that you're on a verge of another recession is gasoline prices as well as oil prices, but gasoline prices. What has been happening to gasoline prices? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they've been going up, up, and up. Invariably, right, sometimes it's coincidence as you go into the recession or just a few months after. You'll see a peak in gasoline prices, and right after it, like clockwork, the economy enters a recession. One, there are two items that I look and follow in terms of prices. One is gasoline. The other is milk. What's happening to milk prices? They've been going up, up, and up. Last night, I needed to get some milk. And I was hoping that I would catch it on sale because they had it on sale. This is the sale price the following week, which I drink milk for cereal. I drink milk. I'm a milk drinker. Skim milk. You know, last week I could get it on sale for $2.88. So I got 2 gallons. And I'm thinking, I always think ahead. So I went in Wednesday, yesterday, thinking, well, maybe I could get one more gallon at that price. Nope, it's back up to its regular price of $3.19. Now, when President Obama was elected and when he took the oath of office in January of 2009, over 5 years ago, a gallon of milk cost $2 or less, and a gallon of gasoline in Dallas, regular, was $1.85. Today, gasoline prices actually went down a little. They were up to $3.60. They're down to $3.53. I know they go 99, but $3.53. It's not a doubling yet, but I see milk and gasoline prices as sort of in a race. And before I came into the studio, I was looking at one of the news stations, and they had a short story about expecting food prices to really be increasing in 2014. That may or may not happen. Because if we go into a recession, you're going to see the unemployment rates go up, significantly go up. And remember, for most of President Obama's term, the unemployment rates have been in the 8%, 9% range, between 8 and 10%, the majority of the time. And yes, initially we were in a recession, but the recession ended in June of 2009. In other words, the economy began to expand or grow starting in July of 2009. That's 5 years. We're celebrating right now the fifth anniversary of a growing economy. Now, what do you need to understand historically? Usually, your recoveries last between 5 and 7 years. We've hit that 5-year mark. We're really now on borrowed time. And we've already gotten a early warning that we already have had the first quarter of negative growth. And I think, I don't like to predict or forecast, but I have a fairly high degree of confidence, not a certainty, that we're going to have a second quarter was negative growth. I don't know how much. I hope it's less than minus 2.9%. I hope we have some improvement. And there's some signs of that. There's a problem, though. This is by far the worst economic recovery since World War II. Actually, it's the worst economic recovery since the end of the Great Depression that really did not end until after World War II was over. You have to go back to the Great Depression to see such pathetically. And let me quickly interject something. We're not anywhere comparable to the Great Depression numbers, whether you measure it in terms of economic growth or lack of it or unemployment rates. It's not that bad. It has the potential to get that bad if we don't start changing our economic policies. And that means getting spending under control. Because the weakness of this economy is the fact that business formations are way down, as is capital formation. Now, why is that important? Because jobs are created in the private sector, and primarily by new small businesses. By small, I mean five people or less. You're just not getting the business formation that you need to generate the job growth. And I'll get to it in a second, I'm promising. But I wanted to give you this background, sort of the big picture, the 35,000 feet view, overview of where we are, where we're at. Because people are really celebrating in New York City today, in the financial district. You know, we went, the Dow went over 17,000. Isn't that terrific? Yeah, the financial sector that largely was responsible, not entirely, there's a lot of blame, for the last recession, the financial panic, and it was a panic, because I really believe in 2008, the economy was doing well. The problem was we've had rampant speculation, and this time it was in real estate, and it was, and a lot of companies invested, your investment banks, your hedge funds, invested in mortgage-backed securities. And when the real estate market crashed, they got hurt. And a lot of firms went out of business, and it put the real economy into a recession caused by what was happening in Wall Street. And what enabled what was happening in Wall Street was an easy monetary policy by the Federal Reserve, which is the U.S.'s, United States's, central bank. They're responsible for monetary policy. Remember, they're a creature of Congress. So we're on the verge of a recession. Not a boom, a recession. Let's not get euphoric over one jobs report. Because why it was an okay jobs report, it's nothing to write home about. And I was listening to some of the reports, and I would think by now they had some perspective. They're not. A lot of what you're hearing on the news, for lack of a better word, is sheer propaganda by people that they're readers. They read a script off a teleprompter and have little or no understanding of what they're saying and little or no understanding of the perspective. Now let me get to the job report. I want to cover that and then get back to where we're at and what to expect. The jobs report had an unexpected increase in job creation for June of this year of 288,000. Now, 288,000 is a good number, but it's not a terrific number. And if you listen to my monthly reports, I'm going to repeat myself because I always need to go over this because most people simply don't understand. Every month, you have people entering the job market for the very, very first time. They're called new entrants to the job market or the labor market. These are primarily high school and college graduates or dropouts. And they're usually people, they're teenagers or people in their early 20s. They're looking for their first job. It might be just a summer job, or it might be a job as they're going through high school and college. In other words, they're working while they're going to school, usually in the evenings. Or it's, like I said, it could be graduates that have now finished their education and entered the job market. In other words, they have a high school diploma, and now they're looking for a permanent job. Now, I was listening to these reports, and I did a little digging. I was somewhat rushed. I was curious what the teenage unemployment rate had done. Remember, 288,000 jobs were created. I didn't hear any mention of this. And remember, all these numbers are seasonally adjusted. The teenage unemployment rate went up to 21%. 21%. Now, I'm going to date myself, but when I was in high school, in college, now really June, May and June timeframe, when either high school or college got out, for me, that was usually in June. I would look for, and fortunately, most of the time, found summer jobs. Most teenagers worked. Now, some goofed off, some went on vacation. But most people, if they could get an opportunity, and it's hard for teenagers to find a job because most employers want permanent workers. And at least when I was in the job, they want full-time. So you were looking for a part-time job, which today is the rule. Then most people that were hiring wanted to hire you full-time. So you had to look for, I mean, permanently. They wanted you to work 40 hours plus, and they wanted you to hire permanently on. However, there were other employers that would hire you full-time for the summer. And if you could find those jobs, and most teenagers could if they really tried, they got hired. Now, teenage unemployment rates have always been higher than the average. But you need to understand, for most of the Obama presidency, the teenage unemployment rate has been over 20%, over 20%. And now it's back up to 21%. That's not good, folks, because that just confirms what you're hearing in the news, that many students, high school and more importantly college, simply cannot find jobs. They're graduating from college and can't find a job. Now, I'm not going to get on immigration because I've covered that in several shows. But one of the reasons they can't find the jobs is the illegal aliens that are coming here. And there are somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens here, not the 11 million. And if you need to know how I come up with that number, listen to my past shows. They're competing. American citizens born, raised, and educated in the United States are having difficulties finding jobs, whether summer jobs, part-time jobs, or permanent jobs, because you have a significant number of illegal aliens working here and taking their jobs because they'll work for less. They'll work off the books, and they'll work for a lot less. And the president's answer for this is to raise the minimum wage. That's the economic genius we have in the White House. The only people that want an increase in the minimum wage belong to unions. They have been the number one advocate of higher and higher and higher minimum wage. Do most union members earn the minimum wage? You better believe they do not. But every time the minimum wage is raised, what do the unions do? They go back to the businesses and demand higher wages. And the number one supporter of President Barack Obama is the unions. So whatever the unions want, President Obama advocates. What would an increase of the minimum wage do to teenage unemployment? I'll tell you, it would dramatically increase it. I would not be surprised if it went over 25% and maybe even hit 30%. Because what's going to happen is many teenagers working today will become unemployed, and many others that are seeking either part-time or full-time jobs will never get them. It's none of the government's business what you, an employer, want to mutually agree to as to what you get paid. And if you don't like the minimum wage, fine. Find an employer that'll hire you for more. You see, what happens is this. There are many employers out there, and they're paying the minimum wage or above, but would pay less than the minimum wage and hire these teenagers so they could get their first job. Because when you approach, if you're new to the labor market and you approach an employer, you're an unknown quantity. He doesn't know if you're reliable. You probably have few, if any, job skills. So the employer, first of all, is going to have to train you in the job you have to perform. And that could be just simply stocking shelves. And he might be willing to pay people $5 an hour. But because the minimum wage is set higher, he says, well, that minimum wage, you're not worth the minimum wage, and I'm not going to pay it, so you don't get a job offer. You see, it makes a lot of people, they're always good-intentioned people. You've already heard the president use this, but we need a living wage. Keep in mind, less than 3% of the workforce works for the minimum wage. Most work for a lot more than a minimum wage. So we're talking a small percentage, but who are we really talking about? We're talking primarily young people, teenagers, and people in their 20s that are going into the job market for their first time. And most have no job experience. That's why it's the first time. And they do have some skills, but there's a big question mark. You know, do you show up for work? Are you reliable? What about your appearance? How do you treat customers? See, the employer doesn't know. You have a big question mark over your head. Now, the employer, and you need to take, most of my clients used to be small business owners. They're always looking to hire good people. They have to recruit and retain good people. And if they find someone that's good, in other words, shows up for work on time, is presentable, does his job well, works hard, gets along with his workers, they want to keep that person. So what do? They increase his salary or his wage. So before you know it, within 3, 6, 12 months, that person has gotten 1, 2, maybe 3 raises and is above the minimum wage. That's why most people earn more than the minimum wage. But the president's answer to the economic problems, the job situation, is to raise it to 10-10, because that'll make all the good-intentioned people feel good. Don't you feel real good? What the president doesn't tell you is you don't feel real good if you can't get a job and the pay is zero. And that's who gets hurt. It's young people. It's teenagers. And that's why I'm highlighting the fact that the teenage unemployment rate now is above 21%, over 20%. It's gotten over 25%. I'm looking at the numbers, and I forgot to say this. For those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the Prompt Pop show is being broadcast right now over the internet. But most of my listeners, more than 99%, listen to this show as a podcast. So the way you listen to this show as a podcast is you go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have a link to at least the last 60 shows, and at the very bottom of the page, you'll have links to all my shows with the exception of the first 7. And in between, you're going to have a lot of information. YouTube videos, charts, graphs, articles pertaining to the story that I'm presenting today, and that is the monthly job report of the BLS. Now, I'm giving you my commentary opinions on that story, putting it in a much bigger context so you understand what's going on. But I give you this information for a reason. I always say, make up your own mind. Do your homework. And I'm giving you information to look at if you have the time. I know many of you do not have the time. Listen to my show? Fine. But if you want to go further, let's say you disagree with me, well, look it up, because I'm giving you some of the information that I look at when I'm doing my show prep. It's really research as to what's happening. What's the lead stories today? And there are several, but this is definitely one of them. There's a lot of celebration going on in Wall Street. What I'm trying to say, don't party. Save your money and stay home, because I think we're about ready to go into a recession. And I don't want that. I truly don't want that. But realistically, that's the conclusion I've come up with. Now, you need to understand that the recession, if it's called a recession, there's a professional organization called the National Bureau of Economic Research. They're not part of the government, but there are a group of professional economists. They have a lot of publications, well thought of, but they have a committee called the Business Cycle. I might get the title a little bit wrong, but they're responsible for determining when a recession starts and when a recession's end. Now, they're not trying to predict. I need to make this very, very clear. They're trying to just time the business cycle. When did we hit a peak in the economy, and when did we hit a low? And they defined, now they'll say this, and it's important to understand, the usual customary definition is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And we've already had one, and I think we're going to have another one the second quarter this year. And when that news hits, you're going to see a major correction in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Where I start to see peak gasoline prices and the bubbly of the market with higher prices, Wall Street's due for a major correction. Doesn't take a genius to look at to know that. But the problem is you have a recession in Europe, major slowdown, if not a recession in China. A lot of the world's economies are already in a recession, and we're about ready to go into another recession. Even though we had 288,000 jobs, according to the surveys. And remember, there are two surveys that the Bureau of Labor Statistics does. They do what's called a household survey, from which the unemployment rate is determined, and they sample about 60,000 households. It's a sample, and it has a large margin of error And you need to understand that. That's why you really need to look at trend data. 1 month does not say anything, because you can have big swings and they're constantly correcting it. They had several corrections, actually, some good corrections in terms of raising previous month's history. Now, why is 288,000 not a terrific number? You need a minimum of 130,000 to 150,000, and this is a range of estimates, every month to just take care of the new entrants into the labor market. So we had 288,000. We covered that. That was covered. But you got to cover it every month. In addition, if you want to truly reduce the unemployment rate, you need an additional approximately 150,000 jobs on top of that. So the rule of thumb that many economists use, and I'm one of them, is you need about 300,000 jobs in a month to reduce the unemployment rate 0.1%. In other words, 0.1%. Now, what happened is the unemployment rate went from 6.3% in May to 6.1% in June. Now, it did surprise, well, not surprise me. Well, why did it go down 0.2%? It's the labor participation rate is the second number you need to look at. We have over 92 million Americans that are not participating in the labor force. Now, I need to make something clear, because there are some major talents in commercial talk radio that and I'm thinking of one in particular, go on and on and on and on, and they're 92 million. They're over 92 million. Americans not participating. Many of those people, that's voluntary. They're not looking for a job. Many of them are mothers taking care of their young children. They don't want a job. And at one time, that was the majority of women. If they had kids, they stayed home. The father brought in the bacon, in other words, got a job, and the mother stayed home taking care of the kids, especially small children. Now today, many mothers, out of economic necessity, have to work. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but you need to understand there are a lot of people in those 92 million that truly don't want to participate. They're not looking for a job. However, and this is the big however, there are tens of millions, and I would say probably 20 million plus, would want a job if they could find it. And they've been looking and can't find it. And many of those people are young people that are now graduated from college and now are staying with mom and dad. The joke is they're in the basement. No, they went home. They're still looking for a job and can't find it. Part of that's what we're seeing. Part of it is people that literally can't find a job, a permanent job. Plus, you have the fact that many people are working part-time, but not enough, not at the pay that they need, nor at the number of hours they need. And that's why they still are looking for a permanent job. And that's reflected in the total unemployment rate, which is at, I believe it's 12.1%, correction. Point one is, I'm not surprised that the unemployment rate went down, given we had 288,000 jobs created, and that's the household survey. Excuse me, the establishment survey. It's separate from the household. The household survey, they'll either call you up or knock on your door and ask you a series of questions. Are you employed? Yes, that's a yes or no question. And if you are employed, how many hours a week do you work? And that will determine whether you're full-time or part-time. Or if you're unemployed, have you been looking for work? And this is a key point. If you have actively sought work in the last 4 weeks, you are included as part of the labor force. In other words, you're participating. However, if you did not actively search, look for work in the last 4 weeks, you're not part of the labor force. Even though you think you're unemployed and would want a job and have looked in the past for a job, depending on how you answer the survey question, you are considered not part of the labor force. Now, what you need to understand about that labor participation rate, it is the lowest it's been since February of, I believe it's 1978, well, 38 years ago. What's 38 years ago? It was in Jimmy Carter's. Was it Jimmy Carter's 38 years ago? 40, well, the point is, and here's the key point. The labor part, if the economy was really growing and booming, the labor participation rate would be 67%. not 62.8%. You see what I'm driving at? We're over 4% below what's normal. That's why there are millions, not a total of 92 million, but there's at least 20 million people in that 92 million that if they could find a job would take it. And many consider themselves unemployed, but they've been discouraged. There's a combination of being discouraged, and then the government only counts people that have been discouraged for, in other words, have not sought employment for less than a year. In other words, if you've been looking for a job for several years, you're not counted at all, at all. And only if you've been actively looking in the last four weeks will you be considered participating. You see, what would be good news? This is another way to look at it. What you want is falling unemployment rates, which we got, combined with rising labor participation rates. Now, let me kind of bottom line it why this is the worst recovery. We are still, believe it or not, 400,000 jobs less than the previous peak in employment. When was that? That was November of 2007 when the U.S. economy had the highest employment level of 146.6 million people were employed. We're not even back to that yet. We're going on, the anniversary will be in November. And I thought by now we would reach that. We haven't. We're still 400,000 jobs short because the economy is producing on average around 200,000 jobs. It's not producing 300,000 jobs. And that's the point. To get to 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 jobs each month, according to the establishment survey, the economy would need to be growing at 4, 5, 6%, not a minus 2.9. Call it minus 3% to round it. You see the problem? It's wrong economic policies coming out of Washington, D.C. That's creating uncertainty. Because when you have large uncertainty, in terms of, for example, tax rates, health insurance, regulation, what's happening overseas in terms of a potential for war, and also what's happening in other economies. As uncertainty grows, grows, and grows, in Washington, D.C., the so-called ruling elite, I call them the professional elitist establishment of both parties, they're the problem. And you elect these guys. So you need to correct the problem, and you're going to get a chance to correct the problem come Election Day, November 4th. And remember, tomorrow's the 4th of July, Independence Day. And what's happening? Fewer and fewer people are truly independent of the government. We have more and more people dependent on the government, on welfare, as well as entitlement. Until we get our government back under control in terms of spending, you're not going to see lower and lower unemployment rates. We're on the verge of a recession, and once we're in a recession, those numbers will go right back up. We already have at least 20 million people looking for a permanent full-time job. That's a lot. And part of the problem is we've let in millions of illegal aliens that did not enter the United States legally, got fraudulent documents to work here, and are working here. In other words, we do not have vigorous enforcement of our immigration laws, and that impacts, you better believe it impacts, the employment opportunities of Americans. Because I'll tell you something, folks, if we had zero or near zero illegal aliens crossing the borders, not 3 to 5 million every year, which we've had for the last 15 years, the unemployment rate would not be 6.1%, even though that's the official headline number. It would be under 4 and probably under 3. But when you have a government and two political parties not really vigorously enforcing immigration law for their own reasons, the Democrats to have power because they think 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4 will vote once they get citizenship for them. So they're all in favor of open borders and let as many illegal aliens that can get here have citizenship. They don't care that you have millions of Americans, tens of millions of Americans. You see, the official unemployment level is a little above 9 million, but that grossly understates the problem. Grossly understates it. Because today there's somewhere between 20 and 30 million unemployed Americans. And many of them are simply not participating in the labor force because they've been looking and looking for a job and can't find it. So this was an okay jobs report, 288,000 jobs. That's okay. And the unemployment rate did drop 0.2%. But the problem is you got to look at the details. And one of the key details is what's the teenage unemployment rate? It went up. And you have 92 million Americans unemployed. And even though many of those millions don't want to be employed, you have 10, 20, and maybe higher than that, millions that want a job and can't find it. The number one priority and problem is government spending. But you also have to look at immigration policy. And that's one of the reasons I had the last show I devoted to the problem of illegal immigration, because they are tied to the employment situation in the U.S. economy. You can't divorce the two issues. You got to connect the dots. You see, ladies and gentlemen, there's no silver bullet here. There are many things that Washington could do to make it highly attractive for businesses to form and for existing businesses to expand their operations. In other words, invest. But it's not growing government. Growing government is not the answer, because the overwhelming majority, the largest percentage of new jobs are from new businesses being formed or created, started in the private sector. That's where the jobs are. That's the job growth. Most of the jobs of that 280,000 in June were from the private sector. This is the first month that you had a big pickup in government jobs of 26,000, which you have to subtract out. But put in perspective, the U.S. economy is perfectly capable of generating 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 jobs and higher, because it's done it in the Reagan years. And there are problems in that decade. But my point is, that's what we need. Okay, 288,000 is not bad, but it's not nearly the number that we should be having, and you're not going to get it until you have economic growth rates of at least 3.5%. And if you want those 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 jobs created every month, and that's what the U.S. economy is capable of doing, you're going to need growth rates of 4%, 5%, 6%, and you're not going to get it by growing government. Government does not create wealth. Most of what government does is two things. They redistribute wealth. They take it from the private sector and they spend it or give it to somebody else. And the second biggest expenditure is for defense, which is a legitimate and primary function of government. But more and more welfare programs is not a legitimate function of the government. And I'm talking about food stamps. I'm talking about welfare income payments, security payments. I'm talking about earned income tax credits. I'm talking about Section 8 subsidized housing, and on and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, the problem, the economic problem that the United States faces today is out of control government spending. Until that is brought under control, that budgets as a minimum are balanced at a much lower level, these problems will continue. And keep in mind, the United States over many decades easily can grow at 3%. But with the right economic policies, it can and has grown at 4% and 5%. And if you had really the right mix of economic policies, that could be sustainable. But that means, as a minimum, balancing the budget. It means cutting tax rates. And we don't have the leadership in Washington of either party that's advocating that. The Democrats are certainly not advocating that. They want bigger government, more taxes. That's what they're about. And more borrowing, because we've run deficits where spending exceeds revenues year in, year out by hundreds of billions of dollars. And for several years, trillions of dollars. Remember, a trillion is 1,000 billion. Okay, the trend line is better. Our deficits are getting smaller, but they're still huge. There's no sense of urgency. They don't understand the problem, and they if, listen, if you don't understand the problem, you're not going to be able to cure or remedy the situation. And unfortunately, that's the majority of Congress, and it's certainly the President of the United States. He doesn't have a clue. Because what is he proposing and doing is the opposite, the exact opposite of what you need to do to have a booming economy. So celebrate the 4th of July, and maybe you might be fooled in thinking you had a great jobs report. It was at best mediocre. Yes, it exceeded expectations of economists, but talk to economists that really understand what the U.S. economy is capable of, what the private sector is capable of. And what I'm talking about is 4, 5, 6% growth rates, where we're creating month after month after month, not 200,000 jobs, but double that. I've been saying the economy has been going, is running at half speed to two-thirds speed. We're below that now. And we'll know in late August whether or not we're in a recession. And I'm not, and I'll repeat it again, I hope we're not in a recession, but I'm afraid we are and have been. We're definitely in the worst economic recovery since World War II. And until we have a change of leadership, a change of regime, in other words, vote this president out of office, as well as hopefully get the Republicans in charge of the House or the Senate, we might have a chance. But I'm not optimistic about them because I'm not seeing the leadership from them. I'm not seeing the leadership. And that's what you need. You need leaders, not one person. There's no savior here. There's no messiah. There's no leader, one leader that's going to do it. It's many people that know we have a problem and we know we need to do something about it. And something will be done because if we don't do anything, what ultimately happens? The deficits are going to explode again. The debt is going to explode. Unfunded liabilities, I haven't even talked about them for Social Security and Medicare and Obamacare, are over $100 trillion. Add that to the debt that's only $18 trillion come September. The United States is broke, and we need to get our financial act together, and we need leadership, and there's no sense of urgency. I always say, first, you got to understand the problem. You need to know what to do about it. You have to have the will to do it. But more importantly, you have to have the courage. And when you add those four things together, you suddenly see we have a deficit problem in Washington, D.C., and it's called leadership. We have the establishment that wants to go along to get along. Most of them that are corrupt, and that's what we've had, the corruption of our leaders. Many by those same people that are celebrating today on Wall Street, because that's where they get a lot of their campaign contribution. In addition to the unions and the attorneys and the people that really don't know anything, the uninformed, the ignorant. We're all ignorant on something. But let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, only a small percentage of the American people are interested in politics or economics. They would rather listen or go to a sporting event or watch a TV show or watch a movie. They don't have a clue what's going on. And they're complaining, I can't find a job. Well, if you elect someone that knows how to get you a job, maybe you'll have the conditions that it won't be difficult. But as long as, and this is a problem, people, President Obama got elected, I think, for one big reason, identity politics. People wanted to feel good, the first black president. Well, they're going to pay, they are and going to pay a very high price for doing that. It's no accident that there was a recent poll that came out. Who is the worst president since World War II? Number one was Barack Obama. Number two was George W. Bush. I'm not surprised, because in many respects, their policies are very similar. Both presidents had policies that expanded the size, scope of the federal government. And we've had wars. One thing a nation needs to avoid are war, because wars are expensive. And there's still people beating those war drums, primarily in the Republican Party, the neocons, but they're out there. Yes, the world is a dangerous place, but we need to become independent of the Middle East, and we can, but we have a president that's resisting that for many reasons, mainly because he thinks green energy is the answer. Anyone thinks that green energy is the answer is a fool, because it's not the answer. We need electricity, and we need fuel to power our cars. And what's sad about it, we have the fuel. We have coal, we have water power, we have natural gas, we have oil, and we have a lot of it. And we truly could be independent if we built the pipelines and the refineries and opened up the federal lands. So we have exploration and development on federal lands. All of that the president is resisting because he thinks the answer is green energy. He actually believes in man-made. Well, I don't know if he believes it. He sounds like he does. He believes that man is responsible for climate change. Anyone that believes that should go outside and look up. And you see that big, shiny, yellow sphere? That's called the sun. That's one of several causes of climate change. Man is responsible for only a small, small, small percentage of climate change. And yes, the climate is changing, but it's been changing forever. Man's influence in climate is small. And in fact, we can't do anything about it. But that's a subject of another show. You see, economic policies have consequences. And the consequences of this president's policies is the worst, by far the worst economic recovery since World War II, and continually high unemployment rates. They've been above 6% his entire presidency. I can remember there was a time that presidents would panic if the unemployment rate went above 6%. The acceptable rates of unemployment were 3 to 4%, not 6%, and his entire presidency, it's been above 6%. And the reason is wrong economic policies. Now, I want you to celebrate the 4th of July, but I really don't have time. There's an excellent video, and I will put it on my notes on independence. As a matter of fact, I think it's already there. I would urge you to listen to it. What is the meaning of Independence Day? And some of you will probably be surprised, but because one of the meanings is we're independent of government. We don't need government to be successful. And see, the answer to today's problem is a good-paying job, and you get good-paying jobs when businesses are starting out, growing, and hiring. That's what we need. We don't need more government jobs because the government can't solve them. They're not the answer. They're the problem. To quote Ronald Reagan, government is the problem. And we need to face up to the fact, and government is not going to save you from the problem. They're making it worse. Both political parties are making it worse for the American people. I'll go even further. They're betraying the American people. They're betraying them. They're betraying their oath of office to defend and protect the Constitution. So listen to that short, I think it's about 5-6 minute video on the meaning of independence. Do that for me. I know I have a lot of information, but if you only have time to look at one video, listen to that video. I think it'll make you think. So I hope you enjoy your 3-day holiday. And now to celebrate both the 4th of July and to have a positive beginning of your holiday, let me play my closing music, America the Beautiful. Thomas Pronk. I'm the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community District. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.